mean, I just, you know, I can think back to the same situation last year. I mean, I'm not saying we're going to win the next four games, but, you know, there was a lot of overreacting after we lost game one to the Clippers, and it's just a series. So understanding that, you know, understanding every road team had a tough time in the playoffs. I mean, game one of the playoffs so far this year, and, you know, we'll see how game two goes.
Devin Booker at practice yesterday getting ready for game two of their Western Conference first-round series against the Timberwolves. He's right. There was a good amount of overreaction game one in the first round against the Clippers. Suns lost that game by five at home.
Right.
Then reeled off four straight victories to win that series in five. You know, there's similarities, but there's a lot of differences,
yeah,
too.
Listen, I think I appreciate the effort to try to kind of massage what happened in game one. After game one against the Clippers, why that series turned is Kawhi Leonard never came back to the basketball court.
That is true.
That's kind of a big deal.
Yes.
So it's not like there was this massive correction by the Phoenix Suns and they got everything right. They got a gift is what they did, to be honest with you. But again, I understand that if you're Devin Booker and you're the Phoenix Suns, part of what you have to do is you got to build yourself up to believe that you've got this. Yeah, and I heard a lot of that yesterday. I heard Kevin Durant minimize Anthony Edwards getting all up into his grill, and he said, "Look, it's just hoops. It's just a series. It's just hoops." I don't know. At some point in time, I think Suns fans are going to get real tired of the constant minimizing of what this means to these two guys, and they don't mean any harm by it. But a lot of these things are hitting the fan base sideways.
Yeah,
and not in the best way.
We're going to get into that in a little bit more on a deeper basis, because I think there's a lot of truth to what you said just there. But we can start with the real, you know, 30,000-foot view.
Mm-hmm.
Devin Booker talked about that. He talked about road teams struggling so far. Road teams are 0-11, as you pointed out earlier. So far in the playoffs, not a win for a road team. Can the Suns break through? We'll find out. But it starts with, you know, we talked about all the things that need to be corrected. The number one item that needs to be corrected is you need more from Devin Booker.
Mm-hmm.
Credit to Minnesota. They made life difficult. He got 16 shots. He only made five of them. One of the five that he made was a circus shot. It might be the most difficult shot he's ever taken.
It might be,
in his career, but he had 18 points. And going into this series, you know, on the ledger, the side of the ledger that says why you should be confident about the Suns.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody pointed, well, Anthony Edwards has not played good against the Suns this year. 42 points in three games. You know, 42 points on 44 shots or whatever it was.
It was 0-10 against Book in the last 10 meetings.
Things can change very quickly. Now, Anthony Edwards has a very impactful 33-point performance where not only scoring a lot of points, when he scored them, how he scored them, and how he let people know how he scored them as the talk of one of the talks of the NBA right now. We got to look at Devin Booker because this was minimized too by those two regular season wins to end the year. The Suns beat the Timberwolves twice in very different fashion, two times. Once in Phoenix in a defensive struggle, once in Minneapolis where they played maybe their best game of the year in the last game of the season. In those now, and you count game one of the playoff series, Devin Booker's 14 of 44 against Minnesota in these three games. He's averaged 18 points per game. The focus needs to go on, and it's not all on Booker. It's on the coaching staff. It's on the teammates. You've got to free him up. You've got to find ways for him to get his.
Yeah.
Because if he doesn't get his, you're not going to win
the
series.
You got to give him some space. And so that starts, I don't know what it starts with, but I've got an idea. So Jaden McDaniels for the Timberwolves is a really good, young, long defensive player who is, and I had not seen this, but he is really good at getting through screens. And we saw that in game one.
Yes.
And so that's step one. If you're going to set screens for Book, you're going to have to seal off this guy. And then give Book a matchup that he can exploit. And I think Devin Booker has got to get back. There was a time, I think dating back to last year for a couple of years, where Devin Booker seemed to glide on the court and he seemed to get anywhere he wants.
Yes.
He's got to start attacking. And he's got to start he's got to display the gravity that Anthony Edwards gave the Timberwolves in game one. be a force, and then it's going to lift everybody up around you.
Yep. Here was Frank Vogel yesterday on how to free up Booker in Game 2.
Yeah, we discussed a lot of ways. I'm not going to share that with the T-Wolves, but that's one of our focal points.
Yeah, good. That's good to hear. Let's see if they can put it into practice tonight. Now, Booker also was asked, hey, any positives from Game 1?
Not a lot. I said I like how we played up until the end of the third. And, you know, once they had their rhythm and their flow, you know, everybody was making shots. So, you know, just keep playing hard. You know, that's where you want to be, you know, going into the fourth quarter, close game on the road, and then, you know, execute from there. So we're going to make our adjustments.
That's another thing that's probably not going to happen the rest of the postseason for the Suns. I doubt this team is going to go 7.5 minutes without a basket ever again this year.
Yeah.
And it happened. It's just one of those things. And again, you have to give credit to the opponent.
Yeah.
But Devin Booker, you know, Anthony Edwards turned it around in Game 1. That's how quickly it can change.
Yeah.
One good game. And if it happens tonight for Devin Booker and the Suns find a way to break through on the road and come back even, you'll see the overreaction on the other side from the national media.
And listen, that was part of what went against the Suns in Game 1. When Anthony Edwards went off in the third quarter and that game got tilted and that game got sideways, it was such a relief for the crowd in Minnesota who had been bracing for the worst and who had seen the worst in this matchup against the Suns that it created a very, very intense environment. Suns, it's just one game. That's all it is.
Yeah, that's indeed all it is. It is now time for Character Counts, presented by Parker & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, and Electrical. Earlier this month, Arizona Cardinals tight end Trey McBride and running back DJ Dallas participated in a National Football League United Service Organizations tour to visit U.S. service members at 6 military bases in Poland. Each year is part of the NFL Salute to Service initiative. The league collaborates with the USO to connect select NFL players with U.S. service members and their families at military bases across the globe, providing them with the opportunity to meet our nation's heroes and experience a day in their lives. During this year's tour, McBride and Dallas interacted with service members to learn about their roles in the military and received mission briefs from senior leaders on their mission in Poland. They also observed military equipment demonstrations, participated in an Army combat fitness test, and joined in on a Madden gaming tournament with service members, all while conducting meet and greets and sharing meals with service members. The players also had a unique opportunity to meet with service members from the Arizona National Guard, who are ardent Arizona Cardinals fans. Character Counts is brought to you by Parker & Sons AC, Plumbing, and Electrical, celebrating 50 years of helping customers and community. Call Parker. Coming up next, the subject of impact, Anthony Edwards' impact, and how it really affected Game 1 and how the Suns responded to it. Some good stuff coming up next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Hey, everybody, it's Bernsie. Devin Booker, noticeably absent scoring-wise in Game 1. How big is it for Devin Booker to bounce back and look like D-Book in Game 2? It's the Burns and Gambo Show, and it starts at straight up 2 o'clock.
Kevin Durant did have, 31 this game? He did have 31. He did shoot 11-17 from the field. But no matter what numbers he put up or how effective he was, Anthony Edwards only scored 2 more points than him. But their impact appeared oceans apart. Because Anthony Edwards and what he did and what he was bringing to the table, I'm talking about slashing to the basket, fadeaway jump shots, dribbling, dancing on cats, basically calling for Kevin Durant. I mean, you're looking for dudes. He was looking for them.
I bet you never heard that guy's voice before. Stephen A. Smith from ESPN talking about the impact, comparing the two. Look, there's some validity, in my opinion, to what Stephen A. Smith says about Game 1. Mm-hmm. The impact in a game where Anthony Edwards scored 2 more points than Kevin Durant. Oceans apart, I don't know if it's that. But the reason why is Minnesota won the game. Anthony Edwards, he had stretches where he was putting on a show. There's no doubt about it. The deep three-pointers, the steal and the slam, the bucket off the window. He showed his repertoire in that game. Without Kevin Durant, the Suns get blown out by 50 in that game. So he had an impact in the game, and Kevin Durant, for much of it, was keeping the Suns afloat.
Yeah.
The difference to me is Anthony Edwards, he started turning it on when, and it was smooth downhill sailing.
Right.
He was adding on to what the Timberwolves had already done to the Suns.
Right.
Well, Kevin Durant was basically fighting an uphill battle alone for much of that game.
Especially in the first quarter,
yes.
So, I agree with you. The timing about when each player went off kind of impacts that. Here's something that I think is going to be very interesting, and I'm curious to see what Kevin Durant's demeanor is going to be like tonight. Because Anthony Edwards, when he started jawing at KD, and it looked like it was good-natured jawing because he was smiling.
No,
right?
he said some stuff.
Oh, yes, he said some stuff, but Kevin Durant was just smiling back at him like he was enjoying, like he found it funny. I wonder if Kevin Durant, in the time that has elapsed since game one, is thinking, I got to go put it to that fool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I would think that if you're a big time competitor and one of the greatest to have ever done it, and KD's probably a top 15 player in NBA history, you can't just take that smiling, can you?
That's what a lot of Suns fans are wondering. Here's another clip from. Well, I'm not even going to play the clip. Suns fans were like, had that reaction, like, oh man, they're getting beat. They're getting punked now, too. And Kevin Durant is smiling about it.
Smiling, laughing about it.
You got to pick your spots in those situations.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with you.
When Anthony Edwards let Kevin Durant know, called him old,
yep,
used all those phrases that he used.
Mm-hmm.
It was clear the Timberwolves were winning that game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very curious to see exactly what you said. How much filing away happened and what that means for Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves tonight. Because Kevin Durant can be cold-blooded. You don't become a top 10 player in the history of the NBA without being cold-blooded.
Of course not. No, that's exactly right. So I would hope that both these guys come with the crimson backside.
Yeah. And I
like that, Sarah. The crimson backside.
Artful.
Yeah, it is artful. It's an elegant way.
Yeah. And you are nothing if not elegant.
The cherry red posterior.
Yes, yes. And you would think that would be very appropriate. Because, you know, if you're Devin Booker and you just went 5-for-18, people are talking, all right, is this dude any good under pressure? That's not my opinion, but this is the way this league rolls. And if you're KD, I mean, come on. Now, ain't that something? That's KD.
Well, it's so funny, too. And I'm not saying it's not deserved. Anthony Edwards is certainly still up and coming.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's won 2 playoff games in his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
You would think he was Michael Jordan reincarnated with the way he's being talked about.
It was really over the top. So Stephen A. tells the story that how he picked up the phone during game one and called Michael Jordan, and Michael was talking about how that dude is different. And at the end of it all, Stephen A. Smith said, they in trouble, speaking about the Phoenix Suns. So Stephen A., what he saw in game one was enough to make him think that the Suns cannot hang with this basketball team.
Yeah, it was more from Stephen A. on Edwards.
Anthony Edwards said to Malika Andrews coming in, you know, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, and them, they think they the best two guards in this game. Well, I think I'm better. He didn't say it after the game, Shannon. He said it beforehand. He said it before he met up with them. And then went out there before the game and was like, here I am. Here I am. And when you are a Kevin Durant, you are a Bradley Beal, you are a Devin Booker, there's something to be said. Look, man, y'all played pro sports. I did it. You know this better than me. When you see somebody coming, how do you stop their momentum? You stop their momentum by saying, yeah, you coming, but damn it, I'm here. Who you think you dealing with?
Right.
We ain't see that Saturday. We ain't see that at all. What we saw was a Suns team that had to bow down to the onslaught that was being brought down upon them by this brother.
Yeah, it's a realization you're down 20.
Mm.
Strip away all the theatrics and all the vocal inflections there. There was a realization that happened for the Suns. Now, if they come back and let that happen again, mm-hmm, now you got yourself a story.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. I think there's validity in what Stephen A. Smith said for one game. It doesn't mean it extrapolates, and it doesn't mean the Suns are getting swept out of this. Like I said, I think when Anthony Edwards went off, it was a moment of liberation, not just for him, but for that entire crowd in Minnesota who had watched the Suns beat this team down repeatedly and who went into this first-round matchup thinking, we're cooked.
Yeah.
We're going to do this again. The Minnesota way is going to take. And so in the third quarter, it became clear that, wow, this game's going to be different. And it turned into a giant, giant party. And sometimes as a basketball team, you do bow down to that. But you get up. And again, watching Kevin Durant laughing and smiling, I think that plays into that narrative that the Suns didn't react appropriately to the onslaught, if you will.
But it also indicated to me that they're, you know, when you smile and you're like, okay, you're having your moment now, kid. I am filing this away. Doesn't guarantee anything. And to the point that Stephen A. Smith made, Anthony Edwards saying he's better before the game. Yeah, he's a very confident player. Every player should feel the way Anthony Edwards does. I'm the best player on the floor. That's what makes the better players great, is that belief that they're the best player on the floor. He was on Saturday. Will he be again? You know, if he elevates the Minnesota Timberwolves to a series win here, I can only imagine how off the charts the adulation for Anthony Edwards is going to be, but at least it'll be more deserved.
Right. Yes. So, and again, so I don't know. I think I know. I think what made Stephen A. go in so hard on Anthony Edwards was just the way he emotionally took over that game. Now, yes. Again, this is his first good game against the Suns in forever.
Yeah.
Forever. And so I do think, like you, that it's a little premature to go that far in on this.
Yeah, and Anthony Edwards can continue to play good. Can the Suns win this series if Anthony Edwards slightly outplays Devin Booker? The Suns can still win the series. Can the Suns win this series if Nikhil Alexander Walker continues to play better than Devin Booker?
That's a no. That's a great point.
Got to be better.
Yeah.
Book's got to be better. Durant was good. He's got to be better in certain areas, too. Coming up next, we'll hit the big stories of this Tuesday morning in the Rush Hour Reboot with Sarah Cazell. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. Arizona built for America's dreams.
Welcome into the Rush Hour Reboot, everybody. We are getting you caught up on everything you might want to know in Valley sports, sometimes beyond. Not today. The Valley has us plenty busy here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. So let's get you caught up right now. I am Sarah Cazell with Dan Bickley.
Hey!
Vince Murata.
Mom already made a shot.
And Jarrett Garland.
I literally walked right into a bum.
Where'd you see Jarrett?
Wow.
Ooh, ruthless. Do you remember that, Dan?
I do. Yeah, it was a Sunday morning in Seattle, and I was walking up the street outside of my hotel to get a coffee before a Cardinals-Seahawks game, and I literally walked into a homeless man who was sleeping on the sidewalk. I didn't see him.
Wow. I literally walked right into a bum. Wow.
Eyes off your phone, Bick.
I don't remember that.
That was when Bick used to have to travel for all the Cardinals games and then sometimes do the Monday show calling in.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump in with the Phoenix Suns. It's game day, folks. Game 2 against the Timberwolves. We all saw what happened in game 1. A 120-95 loss to the Timberwolves behind 33 points from Anthony Edwards and some tears as well.
And stop crying.
Yeah, we're going to start there. The legend.
The legend.
He was on with us yesterday to recap game 1, and he shared what he saw from that performance.
Okay, can I say 2 words to the Suns players this morning?
Yes.
Stop crying.
Thank you.
This is the playoffs. This is for the big boys. When you think you're fouled, get out there and be aggressive. Let's see some of that aggressiveness. Just stop crying on every call. You're not going to get calls. We know that whole scenario. We're not going to talk about the officiating. Just play as physical as has to be played. And stop crying.
What do you guys think about
that? I think it's great advice. I really, really do. Now, people have pointed out that Al McCoy was among the loudest critics of NBA referees, but I think these are two different things. I think what Al is saying is this is not the way you react to physical play, because you're not going to get the calls. You need to match physicality and then some. That's the way you do it. How do you deal with bullies? Do you run from them? Do you hide from them? No, you throw sand back in their face, Jarrett.
Do you?
Or you? I don't know what you do.
You don't lay your hands on somebody unless they lay their hands on you first. Then whatever. You finish it.
Whatever.
There's some irony there, too. There seems to be, and I'm not accusing only Al of this, but the people that are on are going, hell yeah, Al, tell them. The Suns have a problem here. Every team does this. Watch it. Anthony Edwards was on the winning end by 25 points the other day, complained incessantly. That's what happens in the NBA. It just does. Is it bothersome? Absolutely. The Suns shot more free throws than Minnesota did the other day. Now, that's not to say that they sufficiently match the physicality. I agree with Al's point there. Match the physicality.
That's it.
If it starts to get ramped up during the game, ramp up with it.
That's what he's saying, but at least in my opinion.
It's not going to even that is not going to completely quell the individual players or coaches' frustration with officiating. That's just baked into the NBA right now.
But again, it's also speaks to a player's mindset. Where are you competitively if that's where your focus is always at? Yesterday, Devin Booker, in his very low-key way, said the issue is the physicality of the playoffs. They were being real physical with me, and when I try to be physical back, I'm on the bench with fouls. Anthony Edwards was on the bench with three fouls, too. So this is what bothers me and what bothers some people. It's not just the crying. It's the incessant focus on officiating.
Let me play that for you. Here is Devin Booker talking about striking the balance or attempting to of being physical versus fouling out.
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough balance where I'm trying to, find, too. You know, where guys are being physical with me, and the moment I'm physical with them, I'm in foul trouble and on the bench. I look back at my second and third one, the pass underneath that Mike tried to make that I stole cleanly, and then the trap on Carl, which was initially called on Brad and then changed to me. But it's a physical game, so it's trying to find what they're going to call and what they're not when guys are being physical with you and you try to return that.
Okay, so with that in mind, how do the Suns right the ship tonight in Game 2?
Yeah, I think that they have to kind of tamp down Anthony Edwards, because clearly, like I said before, the word gravity keeps coming to my mind. When he's on, it lifts everything and everybody on that team. And then they got to unlock Book, and they've got to limit turnovers. They've got to play the Timberwolves. I won't say to a draw, but not they need to rebound better. So I think there's some little obvious things they have to do. I think strategically there's some things they have to do, but I think their stars have to be better than Minnesota's.
I think it goes beyond the stars, too. I think the role players need to be. They got nothing from their role players. With or without Grayson Allen tonight, Eric Gordon needs to be a factor in these games.
Yeah, that is true.
He can't go out there and put up an offer and not contribute anything offensively. Royce O'Neal, I think, was good. Other than that, I think the role players were pretty bad for the Suns. I think it's just an individual ramp up, if you will. And Bick's right on Edwards. You can't let him have that much impact on any stretch of the game. You got to limit what he can do. But when he has those runs where he's affecting everything and then the crowd gets behind him, that's what the tidal wave was on Saturday.
All right, that's a 4:30 tip from Minnesota, Arizona time. 3:30 is when our coverage begins on 98.7 in the Arizona Sports app. We're also going to preview tonight's game from Minnesota's perspective at 8:30 with John Krasinski, who covers the Timberwolves for The Athletic.
Jim Halpert from The Office.
Identity theft is not a joke, John!
He spells both names differently, by the way.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Is it J-O-N?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, that's at 8:30. All right, let's get to the Diamondbacks. They lost their series opener to the Cardinals last night in St. Louis, 5-3. Arizona scored two runs in the second and then another in the fifth. So they were up 3-0 going into the bottom of the sixth, which is great if you're a Cardinals fan, because they then scored five unanswered runs, including a walk-off two-run shot in the bottom of the ninth by Nolan Gorman from Sandra Day O'Connor High School here in the Valley. He had been in a slump, by the way, going into the bottom of the ninth. He had been 0-for-19 before the home run off of Kyle Nelson.
Wow.
D-backs manager Torey Lovello postgame basically said, we let them hang around. We couldn't get the big hit late in the game. So, guys, why do you think there is such a big difference when it comes to the D-backs run production early in games versus late? Why do they just stop scoring?
I wish I knew.
I don't know whether their individual at-bats are better early on in terms of working counts and waiting for the right pitches. I wonder if they get impatient as the game goes on. I don't know. They're, like I said earlier, if this was a flaky team that didn't, you know, that wasn't always in their laptops, they were kind of goofing around a lot, you might go, okay, this team needs to button it up a little bit. But these are really buttoned-up young pros, which is why Torey Lovello became the party animal last year, because he wanted this team to stop. The joke around the Diamondbacks is the team is full of guys who, after the game, instead of dropping by the hotel bar and hanging out for a while, they're getting two bottles of water and going back to the room with their laptop to study their swings. So it's not prep. It's something else, and it's confounding.
Mental?
I mean, some people have suggested the over-preparation for the starting pitcher of that day that they're facing. They're ultra locked in on the starter, maybe not as locked in on the bullpen guys. I want to go back to something you said that doesn't have anything to do with the offense. You're stepping in as a reliever in a tie game in the ninth inning with a runner on base against a batter who's 0 for his last 19, and that's the first pitch you give him? Here, get healthy, Nolan.
Right.
And when you speak of me, speak well. I mean, that's basically what that was.
That pitch was, you don't need two subs, Utah, because that one meatball's big enough.
Oh! Dang. Well played. Quickly, before we break, Paul Sewald is making a rehab appearance today for AAA Reno. Do you know the team that he will be facing, either of you?
The Sugarland something daddies?
Ooh. Wow.
Sugarland Sugar Daddies? No, but close. The Sugarland Space Cowboys. How fun is that? I love minor league baseball.
You know, some people call that team Maurice.
Yeah.
Woo!
That's funny.
Thank you, Sarah. We're all rebooted. Rush Hour Reboot every morning with Sarah Cazell at 7:30. Coming up next, as we get closer to the NFL draft, on this show, we are of the belief that Marvin Harrison is the top wide receiver prospect by quite a margin. How widespread is that thinking? We'll share some intel on that next. It's Bickley and Murata mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley and Murata. Hash marks.
Pick is for sale, but no sales are final until they're on the clock. And even then, I think 4 is going to be a tough spot to get to for some teams. I just don't know in the end that Arizona is going to be willing to give up the chance to get the top wide receiver in this draft to move out of that spot to get extra picks. Could it happen? Look, the Cardinals were brilliant last year in the way they manipulated the draft. Monty Austin-Fort, their general manager, went from 3 to 12 to 6, got everything he wanted, more picks. It was brilliant. It was great. And they're going to be open to doing the same thing. But let's just assume that it's Minnesota, which is the most likely team in my mind, to trade up. Is Minnesota going to give up all the compensation that it needs to get up to 4 when it might be able to do it at 5?
It's Adam Schefter of ESPN appearing on the Pat McAfee Show yesterday talking about that Cardinals 4th pick. Hard for a lot of teams to get there. Teams might get cold feet, having to give up, depending on where they're coming from. If you're coming from a double-digit draft position, Bick, to move up to number 4, it could take a lot. And the Trey Lance example is there. That was a lot to give up. And the 49ers did it and somehow still survived the swing and the miss there.
Yeah.
So if the Cardinals stay at 4, we've talked a lot about, hey, wide receivers, area of need. They need targets for Kyler Murray to make him more comfortable going into this year as the starting quarterback for the Cardinals. Marvin Harrison Jr. should be there at 4 if the Cardinals stay put. Although the Patriots now are talking about maybe moving down, that could complicate things. But how widespread is the thought that we have that Marvin Harrison Jr. is clearly the top wide receiver on the board? You know, many people, including C.J. Stroud, and others have said, don't overthink it. Draft Marvin Harrison Jr. There's a piece on The Athletic today from Bruce Feldman. He did some intel with some anonymous people around the league. And he writes, I came away from the NFL scouting combine thinking that the two closest players to sure things were Ohio State's Marvin Harrison Jr. and Washington's Rome Odunze. In Harrison, you have the son of an NFL receiving great and the most complete of what has been a remarkable run of Buckeye star wideouts over the past decade, many of whom have shined in the NFL. I'd assumed he'd be the number one guy on every wide receivers board, but apparently that is not the case at all. He quotes a bunch of different people around the league, including a veteran NFL receivers coach who said, quote, Harrison's not number one to me. Malik Nabers is the number one on my list, and I think he is on the on a lot of people's list. He's just different to me. I don't think it's anything towards Marvin. I just really think Nabers is that good. His skills with the ball in his hands are really different. His acceleration is just different. His explosive is different. He tracks the ball really well. He's a smaller guy but can still play outside. He's rare in a lot of ways. He's got some Jamar Chase in him, some DJ Moore skills. You know, he's fast as the person chasing him. It went on and on, and there was a lot of similar sentiment to that. So you wonder, what if Monte Austin Fort is staying at four with the Cardinals? What does their wide receiver pecking order look like if that's indeed the pick at number four? Could there be some mystery in it?
Well, listen, yes, but I think I will be shocked if Marvin Harrison Jr. isn't the first wide receiver taken for a couple of different reasons. Even though there are dissenting opinions, you'll find people will tell you they like pistachio ice cream more than they like chocolate. You might call them idiots, but there are people.
Call them Howie Roseman.
Right.
Jack of the Jet.
I like pistachio and chocolate.
There you go. There you go. So, listen, if you've watched tape of Malik Nabers, his get-off ability is insane. His 0 to 60 is insane. His foot speed off the line of scrimmage is something else. But again, how many times have we seen speed not translate to the NFL? A lot. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying Malik Nabers isn't going to be a great wide receiver. A lot of people said they see a lot of Tyreek Hill in him. I don't know, man. I think, again, this is a lot of over-analysis.
Also, you want the wide receiver that's best for Kyler Murray.
You do.
And just having a fast receiver, as we've seen,
is not best
necessarily best.
I agree,
a big physical guy that he could get the ball to.
I agree with that.
Can I read another quote from an anonymous source in this piece from Bruce Feldman?
Sure.
Offensive assistant from the league. Quote, it's Nabers and then there's a gap. He is the best wide receiver in the draft in a couple of years, maybe more. He is Tyreek Hill combined with both of those San Francisco guys.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Well, you know, this guy's dialed in.
He has a second gear. He can stop on a dime. He breaks tackles. You can't jam him because he's just too quick. If you miss at all, he's going to outrun you. He's really competitive, but he can be a pain in the ass. He'll be a guy who'll have something to say to the coordinator coming off the field. He's got that edge to him where he doesn't know when to let up. He doesn't know that those guys are on his side. End quote.
Okay.
Those guys in San
Francisco. That's an anonymous opinion that's very interesting, and I don't necessarily agree with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's all over the place.
How many wide receivers come out of college football with speed so blinding that they can't get pressed by real NFL quarterbacks? I don't know. We're right about at peak silly season.
Yeah, thankfully it only lasts for two more days.
And as I brought up last week, because I had somebody tip me off to this, and again, it wasn't just me. A lot of people kind of saw this coming. The Raiders and Jaden Daniel, there's something happening here to the point now where Adam Schefter is kind of doing the whole, well, what do you do if you're the Commanders and you know this kid really doesn't want to play for you? Do you take them or do you do something different?
The Commanders have been known to do things different.
I don't know how the Raiders can. Yes, but how can the Raiders go get Jaden Daniels? It's almost impossible. Right? Because if Caleb Williams is one and Jaden Daniels is clearly number two.
Well,
what, the Commanders aren't going to trade with the Raiders?
That's the thing, though, is I think there's a difference in individual teams' boards on quarterback, too. I don't think he's clearly number two, unanimous.
Read into this what you will, but over the last couple days on all the betting websites, J.J. McCarthy at number two has skyrocketed in odds. That doesn't mean anything. All it means is that people have been betting on that. But
what we really have to monitor is what color tie J.J. McCarthy is wearing on draft day.
Oh, okay.
Remember the Sam Darnold brown tie theory?
The Browns are going with Darnold. He's wearing a brown tie. Mark it down.
Listen, when you look at these four quarterbacks, history will tell you that three of them are going to be colossal busts, minimum.
Yes.
Of the six quarterbacks that we've been talking about that could all go in the first round, half of them, at best, will be good.
Yeah.
And probably two out of the six.
I mean, we're 3 years removed from Zach Wilson coming in as the number two overall pick. He's on another team. Look at the quarterbacks that have been drafted. They're all on different teams now. They very rarely work out.
No. And you understand why teams do get desperate, because nothing can be more demoralizing to a football team than going into a season with a marginalized, awful quarterback. Mm-hmm. Where do you go with hope then? Nobody buys any of it.
Yeah. Speaking of the draft, join Arizona Sports 98.7 this Thursday for round one of the NFL draft. Flanker's Kitchen inside the BetMGM Sportsbook. Come witness Cardinals history with us. Get a chance to win autographed Cardinals merchandise. If you want more details on it, you can visit the contest page at arizonasports.com. Coming up next, Dan Bickley.
Fire!
Got your blast. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.